now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out Radio. I'm Lara Lanamy.
And I'm Adairan Jenkins. On today's show, a feature-length special. Not one, not two, but three doctors join us live.
Woo! And we're going to be doing some myth-busting around sex, gender and trans healthcare.
All today, right here on Shout Out. Woo!
Rhythm, bum, bum,
bum.
Wait, excuse me, what are you jumping on my...
I'm getting in there.
No, you can't. No. Everyone, can we start a campaign? No, it's mine.
No,
I can share it.
I can play it again if you want to go.
Run it back.
No, we're absolutely not running that back. I can share my limelight, sort of, not really. But you know.
You've never shared a limelight,
no,
have you?
Darling, it's impossible. I'm so in. Oh, wait, who's doing that? Dum dum dum.
That could have been less enthusiastic.
I know, because
it was done out of hatred. It's like hatred. Dum bum bum.
Pure hatred. But no, I'm very.
We got two professionals on the show.
Yes.
Be honest, a couple of minutes, look at it as if say, oh my god, what have we come here for? Luckily, one of them has been here before, so you know what we're like.
Yes,
they have been here before.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm good. I'm like, lots have happened this week. It's already Thursday, which is
busy week.
Yes.
Busy.
One serious thing we do need to mention top of show. I don't know if you've seen the news, but Manchester Pride is folded.
Liquidation.
Well, it is quite good. I don't know if you saw the news, though. All the bars and clubs, etc., in the village have said there will be a Pride. We'll make sure that there will be a Pride.
Manchester Council came out and said, yes, we're still going to be doing something in 2026.
Yeah. Just like maybe not the like all pomp and circumstance that it used to be, like inviting loads of artists. But to be fair, like it started grassroots. Most Pride started grassroots. So what's the problem?
Do we need Nelly Furtado?
Yeah, literally.
Like, love her, but like, you know, is it necessary? Do we need her?
Just set up in parks. Just like put a Pride flag up. You don't need this big production. It's about resistance.
Yeah, Pride was a protest.
Exactly.
So, well, it still is. If you talk to Darren, that's why here in Bristol it always goes up College Green, so it goes past the council bit to make that statement.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's just important that we understand that doing Pride is something that's about establishing and being with your community, and as long as it can still hold that, I think that's the most important thing. So I obviously it's a sad thing to hear, but I think these are the times where like queer people band together, people band together, and they create the most beautiful things because as out of necessity. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens, but it is sad because I was waiting to go back to Manchester Pride and shake my thang with Andy in tow.
Well, you still can.
I mean, of course, Andy. I mean, you're looking delicious tonight, so I definitely want to go up to Manchester Pride with you, and of course you, Adrian, as well. So I'm really looking forward to this show today because we've got treated with three doctors. Technically there's four doctors in the room, and I don't want to say why. But I won't go into it. But we are joined by two incredible people, Dr. Jo Hartland and Dr. Seanad English, to talk about, we're myth-busting about sex and gender, but mainly really concentrating on sex today. So I'd like them to introduce themselves again. So I'm going to first come to Dr. Jo Hartland, because you have been on here before. We can't get enough of you, apparently.
It's because you've got that gorgeous voice.
Hands off.
My hands are on the desk.
I'm going to start charging.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, I think. Hi. So Jo Hartland, pronouns they, them. I'm a associate professor in health justice education at the University of Bristol Medical School, and I previously trained as an NHS doctor. So I stopped working clinically in 2018, but I work a lot now within trans healthcare and kind of thinking about how we give treatments to people equally across communities.
Gorgeous. And Dr. Seanad English, hello. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, this is great. My first time on live radio. And I'm an associate professor at the School of Biological Sciences. I'm an associate professor of evolution and public health. I'm a different type of doctor, not a medical one. So you don't, when you know they say doctor on the plane, I do not raise my hand.
I mean, neither
do I. I do slightly, but like, no, I don't.
Yeah, like, okay, yeah. Not me. My background is animal behaviour, and my interest in this topic is that the teaching I do in Bristol is on sex and gender and sexuality.
Okay. And Joe, do you want to remind us, like, you know, we had this conversation 2 weeks ago now. You and I designed these shows based on the fact that we wanted to truly understand what sex, and we wanted our listeners to truly understand kind of what sex and what gender actually means. And that's because of the ruling that went on, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, at least, one of the goals is that the listeners can think about how they can advocate for people, think about if you want to be an ally to the trans community, what kind of things do we want you to understand in terms of myth busting, in terms of thinking about what does sex mean, what does gender mean, and all of that surrounding it. Because there's a lot of misconceptions, there's a lot of stuff out there at the moment that you can consume on social media, in the press, and it's not all accurate, and it's not all giving a full picture. And I think it's important that we acknowledge that the full picture is not being given.
100%. So when it comes to you, Sean-Ed, I'm really interested. What is the biological definition of sex? Because I'm really intrigued.
Well, that's a great question. And it's something I ask the students at the beginning of the lecture that we give to the first year undergraduates, because it's a short word, only three letters, but it's a really complicated concept. So when we talk about it, there's a process of sex and reproduction, and then there's also the characteristic of sex. So I guess more the latter is your question, which from the biological perspective, it's it's typically defined as being like the genetically determined process which determines maleness or femaleness.
But where does intersex lie within that kind of conversation about what sex is?
Well, it's quite a tricky one to explain to students, and I mean, I should really caveat this is not my area of research or expertise, but I can speak as a biologist with general interest in it. And essentially, it's that it's not a binary concept, even from a biological perspective, and the simplistic idea of the XX chromosome meaning that you are then female doesn't always happen, and you get these cases where you find males or females that don't reflect the chromosomal characteristics.
Yeah, and I guess I'm really interested in kind of this is a self-fulfilling answer, but we're not the only species that kind of exhibit non-binary male and sex. So male and female like sexes, right? So
yeah, well, it's really interesting. I mean, we're certainly not the only species which. So one of the fun examples I say at the beginning of the lecture is that you get some species which have many different sexes, and you get fungi where there's like over 20,000 mating types. So that is really crazy. I think biology is always fun because humans are kind of, you know, the less complicated in some ways. But yeah, you do find that, and you get the actual mode of determination of sex is also really variable across the natural world. So you get the environmental sex determination seen in turtles and some fish.
And turtles. Sorry, that was me. that was out loud. Well, what I was going to say as well, you obviously speak a lot about your university work. What is it for the university students? How do they receive all of this information? What is the most important for them to hear about? Are they receptive of all of this information that you're giving to them?
Yeah, that's a really important question, because when you're a lecturer, you want to make sure that what you're speaking to that is interesting. So the specific lectures that I give is within a unit called Current Topics in Biology. So it's really for biologists who are trying to understand what they're learning from biology and what the societal importance is. So some of it will be about ethics or genetic modification, and the lecture I do is about sex and gender. And I try and make it quite interactive. So we have the first part of the lecture, which is like going through the almost textbook explanation, but then taking it to the more recent and complicated nuance which is not typically found in the textbooks. And then we have a big discussion at the end, because I actually want them to tell me what they find interesting, and I try and change the lecture from 1 year. I've been doing this for about 5 years, and it's such a last year things are happening so quickly, I couldn't really bring in the more recent political things going on in this area, because I just didn't feel I had the right.
You wanted to have more evidence to kind of go exactly with it, to start the conversation.
But yeah. I think you know, maybe even as an outcome of this conversation, listening to more of these shows, I could bring that more in for the students get this in about like March, April next year. And the second part of the lecture is just this big discussion, and that's what I enjoy a lot, because often we don't get to hear the perspective of the students during the actual lecture. Yeah.
They're all sat down just receiving it and not really getting to interact and have their say on it.
And I think that's really important, because they have a very different perspective from the lecturers and the people who've kind of been doing the research.
Yeah, well, especially with Bristol being quite open-minded as it is, I can imagine that they are definitely wanting to engage and have that conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And do they struggle to understand the difference between gender and sex? Like, what would you, I guess it is from your perspective, what would you say the difference is between gender and sex? And how does that all play out for students when they learn about it?
Yeah, so we do, being biology, like a biologist with my background, I do focus more on the sex part and the biological determination of it. So we don't talk as much about the gender part, but we do bring in the developmental perspective and the fact that you get, you know, the set of genes you'll start off life with, but then things will really change across development. And in terms of actually what the definition is, from my perspective, the sex is the kind of the one that's more linked to biological, like your chromosomal identity, but also the other pathways which are being set off early on, which determine the traits typical of male or female. But then the gender aspect is very much of the kind of sociological, psychological part, I would say. And because I study mostly non-humans, we don't really know that. I mean, it could be, I mean, you do get a lot of complicated behavior in many animals, which might indicate that actually the way they're behaving is not typically male or typically female. And I think there's a lot of interesting research in that field, and something I could certainly chat more about with the students. But that's the limit of my knowledge.
No, and Jo, thank you. How is it taught in medicine? How is sex and gender, how do you define those to students, and what's the reception of that?
I mean, we do start very much in a similar place, I think. But I think for when we think about how medics and undergraduate medical students, but also our postgraduates, so those who are working in the fields, you know, now, I think when we think about how do we communicate concepts like sex and gender, we have to think about what is clinically relevant. And I think that's really important. So to have some conversations, things like your gender, so the sociological construct of gender, how you think about yourself in the world and how you perform gender to the people around you, is really important, because that dictates how you're treated in society. But also, there are chromosomal aspects that are important for health outcomes that we need to be aware of, because we know that there are certain circumstances that mean that we should know whether or not someone has certain anatomy. So often what I try and get people to do is talk to people about their anatomy. So not really focusing on ideas of sex or gender, but talking about anatomical risks. So whether somebody has a prostate or not, whatever their sex, whatever their gender, however that might be crossing, they have a prostate, and therefore we need to talk to them about the risks associated with a prostate. Likewise, if someone has a testes, someone might have forms of intersex conditions that might mean they have retained testes. We need to talk to them about the fact that they have testes and therefore they have risks of testicular cancer. So it's about really being specific and open with them about language and about thinking about what is the reason we're talking about this topic, not trying to just pull people down into these very set definitions of like, you must fit into this category and you must fit into this category, otherwise we can't treat you, because that doesn't help anybody.
Because I'm interested about the interplay between like the biology and medicine, though, because, you know, you're kind of in biology, it feels like you're forming, I know you don't do humans, but you're forming the kind of the biological understanding, but then you're also practicing that, like, you know, your students are practicing that, like they're, and also their sociological kind of perceptions, what gender should be and how that like plays out in medical care. That must be so hard for them to navigate, based, like, especially when there's a cultural thing there as well. So like, I'd be interested in like how do you navigate that conversation with them when it like might come up against their beliefs or what they know?
Yeah. I think slowly. I think you have to be slow and patient with some of these conversations. You know, when I give a lecture to 300 students, I have to be very aware that I might have students for whom this lecture that I'm giving could be illegal in the country that they've come to see me from, right? I don't know. I also have students in the room for whom this is their bread and butter, this is their daily lives, they live these experiences. And we have to be able to bring everybody along on that journey. And I think that's something that's sometimes lost within these conversations, is we end up being kind of quite black and white and quite dogmatic about things. And we kind of forget that learning takes time. It is an uncomfortable experience, but you need to be able to gently work with people towards certain ideals and certain expectations. And they don't necessarily have to agree with me by the end of it, but they do need to understand what the expectations of a doctor are in terms of how they care for people, and that's really important. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the difference between kind of the topics that we teach, is that on my end of the spectrum, I guess there's this quite big ethical output thing that I've got to kind of control, whereas I guess for you, there's this more like interesting biological debate that can happen within that as well.
Yeah. I actually have a question for Joe, and okay. Reflecting on how I approach this teaching is, I'm just wondering how you find the materials from which you teach. Are there certain areas of literature which are very dated in this respect? Do you have to point, are there certain leaders in the field where you're really pointing the students towards following that, those papers or those textbooks?
To be honest, because of the amount of things that medical students need to learn, I don't go in too deep on this with them. There's a great diagram, you might have seen it, I think it's in Scientific America, it's called Beyond XX and XY, beautiful diagram that shows how hideously complicated sex is over time, both from your conception to all the way through puberty, and how different things are expressed at different times, depending on what genes are affected and how hormones are released. And that manifest and how your body is changed. And I think that's a great diagram for them, because it shows them, oh, this is definitely a specialty. This is not generic medicine.
I love that diagram. That is the main one I use on that topic as well.
So I guess the main takeaway here, what I'm hearing, is like sex is, the definition of sex is very complicated. We can't speak on, you know, it's exact, like, binary. It's not binary. It's more, it's a fluid kind of, well, not fluid, but it's less defined than we think it actually is. And actually, it'd be interesting to discuss, maybe if you stay a little bit, like what and how we can dispel those kind of myths around sex and what it means within the public. Because I think that just doesn't happen. I don't think, you know, like average people that haven't done a biology degree would actually understand how complex it actually is. So just one more note, how do you think we as a university, or as people that do understand, could actually do more for the education around this, around sex?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think bringing it early into the education is important, but sometimes complicated things, you need to understand the simple part first before you get into the complicated, all the other things that happen in between. But knowing that things aren't so simple from the outset is important to kind of change conception.
And I guess doing radio shows like this will hopefully help more people understand that, you know, go and have a look at those things that, you know, Joe suggested, and see how it is complex. Because, you know,
look at how complex that diagram is, and then think, should a journalist or a politician be talking about it? The answer is no.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless they have that printed above their bed and look at it every single night.
If they can memorize it, they're doing better than either of us are.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much, Sonny. It's been lovely having
you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Shout out
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
Let's go with Nate Smith.
Very country. I kind of like it. I like
country.
It like that.
Get my boots out.
Yes, it's that country.
I think there could be a harmonica in there somewhere.
Yeah, like, oh, I get that. That's a really deep sale.
I got my hold down, hold down, hold down, hold down.
Curtis, I feel like he's very...
Curtis, get out of the kitchen. Yeah. What are you doing in there?
It's giving country a little bit. Country pop. Thank you.
You're tapping your foot, but you're also maybe holding a bit of straw.
Yeah, literally, or like a toothpick.
Yeah.
We love the image.
We're at the hay barrels, guys.
Yes, come through. I'm very happy.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways,
I'm loving the energy we're getting from here.
It's because you're basically playing some banging tunes. Yeah. What do you expect?
Great, great conversations there, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think a little bit of me wanted to know like the gametes and the alleles and stuff like that. But when you go down to the minutiae of what it is, you still don't get it.
Yeah,
no. It's still, it doesn't matter.
And to be fair, you could do that conversation. It could last like 3-4 hours.
Me,
it's
honestly,
got that much
me and the stock exchange, same thing. Never understand it.
Yeah.
Won't ever do.
Exactly. I'd love to, but never can.
No. I'm gay. I don't do maths.
Yeah, exactly. I've got girl maths.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, that lots of people think that the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom must behave exactly as humans do, and you know, they think that there's only two representations of sex, whereas in actual fact the natural world is full of diversity.
Yeah.
Not only just in humans, but in
You're going to really shock the Mail and Telegraph users, Terry, by saying
I am,
there is
yes.
only men and women. It's binary. There's nothing outside of XX and XY. Okay?
That's what the Daily Telegraph
They will
say.
Start freaking out if you start changing it and telling them the truth. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
By the way, hello,
but it was
Terry.
A great conversation. Hello.
Hello.
Mr. Shilton. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm just tickety-boo.
So. Tickety-boo. Yeah, just a little bit out from Jolly Good. So.
Oh, didn't we have this like at the film festival going
oh,
through
what,
weird
the,
things?
The slang that we all use.
All the slang, yeah.
Okay, that is not slang. That is like, oh...
That's ye olde English.
I would love to put you in a room with someone that's really young, like right now, a teenager yeah. right now.
Well, you can't say it be you now, you see. You're not a teenager anymore.
What's skibbity toilet? Do you know what that is?
Skibbity.
That's the younger... I don't even understand it. It's too young for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was stopped at yeet. I stopped at yeet. Like, as soon as you came out, that was
like
me
2019,
done.
Wasn't it?
Yes, I know. And I'm 30, but I can't go beyond yeet. Like, that's it. Like, I'm staying here.
Hang on a minute. There's one term that you all still use from the 60s.
What? Which is?
That's cool.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
You've lost socket to me, and you've lost I can dig it, man.
Was that ever cool?
Right on.
Right on.
It certainly was. Go and watch the original 60s Shaft movie, and
no,
you'll find
Shaft
out
was
what
the definition
slang.
Of cool.
There you go,
yeah,
see?
Yeah. No, but I mean, of course, he's like, you know, he was a massive black actor at the time. My mum loves him. I came home one day, my mum was watching him. She's like, such a... Can I say...
I can't lip read to know what it is you're going to say.
Black
can you say sex?
Yeah.
You can say sex.
Of course
sex.
You can.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was a sexy chocolate man, like, you know, very like, and he was also a good actor. Well, not chocolate,
he was,
but
yeah.
Black man, but yeah.
I think the best scene in that film is when he's in the room with a white prostitute and she's leaving and... he says, close the door on your way out. And he, she says, shut it yourself, shitty. Best bit of the movie.
Really?
What do you say all the time? Slay, isn't it?
Slay.
No, yeah. Slay. Yeah. Okay,
I mean, you realise when we hit Christmas, that's going to have a completely different meaning.
Yes. No, it never does. I don't know what
you can say.
No, it's the way you say it, though, Andy. If you have, you've got to say
slay.
Slay.
Okay,
you got to say a bit
we
cab.
Need to have sleigh lessons with Andy.
Yes,
but we were talking to the car, and even that's moved on.
What do you
because,
mean?
Because well, Lucy was saying that her young nephew is saying something completely different there.
Yeah, that's what I'm
was
saying.
It like bro or something?
Bro.
Bro. Oh, broskies. Bro and broskies been around for a time,
well,
Andy.
Yeah,
I don't know where
yeah.
you've been.
Slay.
Bro was very nice.
People are saying
circle.
Diva a lot. They're like, okay,
Diva.
Diva,
yeah.
Diva.
Okay, Diva.
But that was
Diva.
A 1990s
tiny
thing,
little
yeah, but
with your fingers.
Say it. Like, yeah. Okay, Diva. Go off. Go on, this is a slang session now. Yeah, we need to go into the news.
We
this
do,
is
we
not.
Do.
Are you two ready?
This is the news.
This is Shoutout News. Welcome along as we slay the news. Top British newswire Pink News reports that confusion still reigns in the Labour government after some years of flip-flopping on trans rights. A transgender woman and journalist, Izzy Dine, asked the Equalities Minister, Bridget Phillipson, where she should go to the toilet, gents or ladies. The Equalities Minister responded with a fudge, saying, "As Minister for Women and Equalities, I set out the policies responding to the Supreme Court judgment. The Supreme Court were clear that, for the purposes of the Equality Act, sex is biological sex. What's now happening is the Equality and Human Rights Commission have consulted on a code of practice to me as the minister. I'll then be going through that line by line to make sure that we get it right. It's a 300-page document, so it will take some time." Well, with no clear position arising from that, Ms. Dine spoke to Pink News and said she knew how rare an opportunity it was for the interview being held by a trans person. I'm not sure the government has ever actually been faced with a trans journalist asking questions about trans rights, she said. So I wanted the Equalities Minister to tell me to my face that I shouldn't be able to use the women's bathroom. Commentators at Pink News noted that Phillipson seemed annoyed to have been asked the probing question and that Labour had lost a key opportunity to show leadership in the field of equalities. Lighthouse Bookstore, the long-standing Scottish radical bookstore, presents the city's progressive and radical book fair on the long weekend from the 5th to the 9th of November. The venue will be the city's assembly rooms. Named Ecosystems of Change, the book fair organisers say from the songs and stories of Chumbawamba's Bob Marley to a panel of fighting the far right, from guidance on living and creating in a world in crisis to a roadmap for feminism, we've got a truly phenomenal offering for you this year. All information is at lighthousebookshop.com. The left-wing weekly Socialist Worker reports that waves of enormous protests hit the United States from coast to coast last Saturday, and LGBTQIA plus activists were a part of that, as millions took part in a show of defiance of Donald Trump and his attempts at crushing dissent. The Republican Party had run a campaign of intimidation in the days before the protest, the paper says. The Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson, described the No Kings protests as hate rallies, which would attract Hamas supporters and the Antifa people, he said. Texas Senator Ted Cruz accused the No Kings movement of being funded by George Soros, thereby invoking an anti-Semitic trope. But millions of people in the US defied the Trump machine and took to the streets. Erin in the Morning, a daily essential read for LGBTQIA plus people, reports so often that the loudest voices railing against transgender rights turn out to be projecting their own darkness. The same politicians who claim that trans people are a, quote, danger to children or a threat to women are frequently the ones exposed as actual perpetrators of harm. The latest example, Florida Representative Corey Mills, a fierce advocate of anti-trans and anti-LGBT plus legislation, has been hit with a court injunction after his former girlfriend sought protection from him. According to reporting from the Advocate newspaper, the court found that she has reasonable cause to believe she is in imminent danger of becoming the victim of another act of dating violence. Christopher Wiggins, writing in the gay magazine The Advocate, says on Tuesday last, Circuit Judge Fred Cobaline Jr. issued a final injunction for protection against dating violence against Mills, concluding that the second-term congressman harassed and threatened his former girlfriend, Lindsay Langton. Bristol's Anarchist Book Fair takes place on Saturday the 1st of November at the Elmgrove Centre in the city's Redland district. The organisers welcome LGBTQIA plus activists wanting to link up with other struggles for freedom and say, is the rise of the far right, war, authoritarianism, ecological meltdown and the general omni-crisis getting you down? Are you looking for co-conspirators, some manageable ways to engage with it all, or just some hope? You need the legend that is the full-scale Bristol Anarchist Book Fair back after a five-year break in a big new venue. There will be an amazing range of Bristol campaigning groups across 50 stalls. Come browse for the crew and the project that suits you best, or meet that mate that you haven't seen in a decade. Greg Owen, writing at the top queer newswire LGBTQ Nation, reports that quietly and with dignity, a new executive order came into force in the Virgin Islands last week. This allows for trans and intersex people to change their gender marker on their official documents. The governor enacted the policy by signing an executive order making the change to Virgin Islands United States policy. His order marked the first instance ever of official recognition of trans people in the territory, according to Trans Statistics. And finally, acclaimed US-based rapper Snoop Doggy Dogg has shown his love and support for the LGBTQIA plus communities, according to the South African-based online paper Mamba. The American rapper teamed up with LGBTQ plus media advocacy group GLAAD to mark Spirit Day in the United States, an annual event on the third Thursday of October, during which people wear purple to stand against anti-LGBTQ plus bullying. As part of the campaign, Snoop appeared in a YouTube video without singer Jeremy Bilowait, and who competed on Snoop's team on The Voice reality series. In their discussion, Snoop said, "It's a beautiful thing that kids can have parents of all walks and be able to be shown love, to be taught what love is, because hate is taught and so is love." He added, "Whether it's two fathers, two mothers, whatever it is, love is the key." For further analysis over Snoop Dogg's embrace of LGBTQIA+ fans, please visit the excellent Mamba News online website. Well, that's it for another week. Do be sure to connect to LGBTQIA+ media through the week, whether it be in print, podcast or community radio. Why not check out our own website at shoutoutradio.lgbt. For Shoutout News, I've been Terry Starr.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
A nice bit of Imagine Dragons.
I like
nice
that one.
That was Imagine Dragons.
Yeah, it's different to their sound.
Yeah,
isn't
I'm
it?
Sorry, I didn't. That was them at all. It didn't sound like them. I'm so used to their song Radioactive.
It's giving like.
Oh, they've done a lot more than Radioactive.
That's all I know. I'm sorry, guys. I'm out of myself. I'm not a Imagine Dragons fan.
No.
But you might be after that one. It's quite different, isn't it?
It's very like
jolly.
I'm doing well here. You normally like one track.
It's because they're quite
one.
They're quite.
You like two now?
No, the other one was okay. I said it was kind. Country. I didn't say it was thing.
Okay.
I
do. Well, you were dancing. I took that.
I was dancing. Did you see my booty shaking? Like, you know,
yes.
You know. Andy, you're saying figments. That's your imagination.
We felt it in the room.
Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah. No. Anyway, let's stay on task.
Let's
everyone.
Stay on. Oh, yeah, we have things to ask and things to know.
Yeah, we are joined by the incredible Dunks. And I'm looking forward to this interview. Mm. Back with the Joe Heartland. With the Joe Heartland. Yeah, I know. Okay, that's it.
Famous title.
The one. Sorry, I will get distracted. Dr. Dunk Shrewsbury, are you there?
I am, yes.
Oh, thank God, you've got a gorgeous voice. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I'm so glad we have you. Would you like to introduce yourself and say where you're phoning in from?
Sure. So, my name is Dunks. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm... primarily a GP based in Brighton, and I also work in the Sussex Gender Service, and part of my working week is spent at Brighton and Sussex Medical School, where I'm a professor of primary care and medical education, and I cause all sorts of trouble there as well.
Oh, I like that. Trouble. That's my middle name. Okay.
Yep, we'll agree with
it. Yeah. Everyone.
Andy.
Don't need to grow so quickly. Okay, so within your NHS general practice, how would you define gender and sex? I know that's quite a big question, but I want to know kind of people's, what sure. you define
so,
it as.
Well, I guess it's not really, there's not really an official specific definition that we use in general practice, but it's good to reflect on how the terms are used and might be understood. I think they're commonly conflated and probably used interchangeably and inaccurately so. Mm. But I think when we use the term sex, we're usually referring to the sex that somebody was assigned at birth, which is a shortcut, really. That's a shortcut for an assumption that's made on the appearance of somebody's external genitalia. It's based on, and the assumption would also cover things such as, based on that, what organs somebody might have, what tissues, what chromosomes and genetics they might have, and therefore what hormone profiles they might have at certain points in their lives. And then when we're talking about gender, we're more talking about how somebody identifies in terms of the spectrum of masculinity to femininity or beyond. And that relates much more to how people feel and what we do or feel we can or can't do according to social conventions and how we express ourselves and present ourselves in our lives, I think.
Excellent. Okay. So what is trans healthcare and what does it look like? I'm really intrigued. I don't actually know the answer to this.
So trans healthcare and I mean, gosh, thinking about the care for trans people would include, I guess, a focus on the gender affirming care that trans people might be able to access at certain points in their healthcare journey, and I'll come back to that in a bit. But it's also really importantly the general care that they receive, which should be the same that everybody gets to access through general practice, the routine preventive care, making sure that people have a healthy blood pressure and things like that to reduce their risk of heart attack and stroke later on in life, but then also providing access to the specialist care, such as aspects of gender affirming care through NHS gender services, like the one I work in, and that would include things like fertility preservation, hair reduction, some surgical interventions, and hormone therapy. Some of those, some GPs are able to access and provide themselves with support and advice, but some do require the assessments via the gender services, and then are accessed through them.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, a lot of trans healthcare insight there. But what would you say maybe the misconceptions are around trans healthcare? Because obviously that's a bit more.
Some of the most common misconceptions that I hear and probably aren't terribly helpful are that a lot of care for trans people is rushed, and therefore there is sometimes a misconception that, or misperception rather, that people are given whatever they want and you know, slap a load of hormone gel on within 5 minutes of seeing them, kind of thing. And goodness, that's just not true. I mean, for a start, people have to wait years until they're seen in a gender service, and once that's that appointment comes up, they then have two assessment appointments before a diagnosis can be reached, and it's only once a diagnosis is conferred that somebody would be endorsed for onward gender-affirming care. And that process can take many months and sometimes years and after they've been seen in the gender service. So it's definitely not rushed.
Not like a quick
and
fix
it's not
kind of
something
thing.
That, you know, it's not... it's not based on whim or desire. It very much is based on an assessment, a careful assessment involving usually a multidisciplinary team of several professionals from different backgrounds, working out what is right and what is safe for that particular person. And I guess another common misconception that we hear is that the assumptions around interventions that people pursue or have, that you know, everybody's on hormones or everybody's had surgery, and I think that's often an assumption that is alluded to by some of the sorts of questions that intrusive questions that people in the community experience when in certain situations, and again that's not true either, and you do not need to pursue hormone therapy or surgical intervention to be trans. Not being or receiving either of those things doesn't invalidate somebody's transness. And that can be for a number of reasons. Sometimes it's not medically safe or to pursue those things. Sometimes it's not what that person needs or wants. And sometimes it's because somebody might have had some time on hormone therapy and that achieved what they needed But ongoing hormone therapy isn't required to maintain those changes. And so there very well be people in the community who've had periods of time on hormone therapy but have stopped for one reason or another.
And
another reason is that sometimes people's transition goals change. Sometimes you find that as you see people experiencing their lives and their gender identity in the context of treatment, that can help them understand what their lives might be like post treatment or on continuing on treatment and weighing things up. Sometimes that doesn't feel right for that person, or sometimes because of their social situation, if they're not entirely safe or supported, it doesn't feel appropriate for them to continue on it, and they have to make a difficult decision about stopping it for a period of time.
And I guess I had the question, because you said something that was really key, that, you know, someone doesn't have to medically transition or change their body, but the problem with this is that the Equality Act only protects those that have undergone or want to undergo gender reassignment. Am I right in that, Joe? Do you know, in the gender affirming care part of it?
That's a really interesting... Dunks, in your experience, how would you answer that? Because although the Equality Act does describe gender reassignment, the language around healthcare and transness has sort of evolved since, you know, the writing of the Equality Act, which I think is really important for us to be able to kind of recognise.
Yeah, the law is a good example of where language is a bit clumsy, and terms are used interchangeably, and it's not as slow to develop as language does socially. But my understanding of the law, even in the Equality Act, is that somebody would be considered protected under the characteristic of gender reassignment if they intend to pursue any form of change that would align their identity to their sense of their gender, and that doesn't have to be medical intervention.
So importantly, intervention. That can be social interventions as well.
Social changes, such as legally changing one's name, but also the law does have a clause in it that says that somebody can be protected under, say, a protected characteristic such as gender reassignment on the basis of being perceived as having that characteristic. And that was something that was subtly re-clarified in the UK Supreme Court ruling that happened back in April this year, which that opens another can of worms for discussion. But
and I think we concentrate so much on the gender dysphoria, right? But I do want to hear what their gender euphoria has felt like for some of your patients. Like, why does trans care, you know, connect with that gender euphoria, and how have you seen that play out?
I'm so glad that you asked that, because it's a really beautiful thing to reflect on. I love being a GP as well, but the work that I get to do with the trans community is uniquely beautiful and rewarding. Seeing people become themselves is really if you could encapsulate or personify the definition of a glow up, genuinely seeing people come to beam and glow as they grow into who they've been all along, but may have hidden or suppressed under layers and years of fear and shame, and it shows. And some of the language that you hear people use when they're describing the changes they feel, it's not just internally feeling more aligned and right and settled, but you hear metaphors such as being able to see in colour. Life feels like it's in colour again now, rather than monochrome that they experienced before. And it really, really, I can't stress this enough. It does save lives, because after years and years of feeling that who you are deep inside is not accepted or not approved of, some people, sadly, who don't get to grow into themselves, feel that they have no option but to either continue suffering or to end that suffering themselves. That's why this is so important to understand and to continue providing access to and further improve access to, because this really can save lives.
I mean, it does sound
improve mental health and improve somebody's confidence to be able to live their lives fully.
And yeah, it does sound as special. That's very special need that people have to get that access to trans healthcare, to live those full lives, like you've been saying. On that topic, do you have any advice for those that maybe be listening that feel that they are trans and they want to start the process to kind of see a GP? Where would you lead them? What would your advice be?
Yeah, and I would love to say, just do it, go and see your GP. But I know, as a non-binary person myself, and as somebody who's worked with the community for several years, that there is a huge variability in experience, and not everybody gets access to a GP who understands or has the expertise in this area, or maybe not even the willingness, sadly, to help in this area. And I feel a great sadness at having to admit that about my profession. But there are resources online. So if somebody were interested, you could search Google. I wish I knew it off the top of my head, but search Google for trans-friendly GPs, and there are organisations that have curated lists of surgeries and particular doctors in the UK who are known to be and have a proven track record of being affirming. Because the community has had to withstand such adversity, the community has at large generally developed a beautiful, sophisticated way of skillfully supporting each other, and they shouldn't have to, but they have, and so if somebody is questioning or thinking about what that might mean for them, and they would like more support or some information, the community organisations, and in Brighton we've got a fantastic one called the Clare Project, but there are some dotted around all over the country, and some national ones as well, who are great at providing support and holding group activities where people can meet one another and support one another. Of course, at some point, in order to access care, that door has to be opened.
Yes, it does.
It can be helpful if you're particularly apprehensive about making those first steps. It can be helpful to take a friend with you, somebody who might help
support system.
Say the things, or help you say the things that are under the surface but a bit difficult. And the other thing to say is that some NHS gender services do have a facility for self-referral that doesn't require going through your GP. That's not the case for all gender services, I don't think, and the variability is a bit frustrating, but do check out the websites for the various gender services, because it might be that one near you does facilitate self-referral. The other thing to say is that most of us do offer appointments online now. So even if you were to self-refer or be referred to somewhere that was quite far away, it doesn't mean you would necessarily have to make that long journey to get there every single time.
Okay, thank you so much, Dunks.
Thank you, Dunks. It was so important
to hear your words, and especially about gender euphoria, because it's such an important, I guess, emotion for them to be able to feel, especially after scare. And I'm really interested in how, Joe, you know, medical students, you say they are the future doctors, right?
Yeah.
So, like, and you say you can barely touch on it. So that kind of concerns me, that we're not actually touching on these key topics. And so people that are meant to be in the position of power don't actually have all the, you know, the tools with them.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our teaching with the medical students focuses less on what the treatments are, so hormones, surgery and things like that. It's much more about thinking about how do you respect, care for and give good service and like advocacy to trans patients across the spectrum, so that you're not, they don't need to know the specialist like knowledge on qualification. What they need to know is, how do I advocate for people? And I guess that's what we want the listeners to be thinking. How do you advocate for the trans people in your lives so that they can access care, so that they feel safe around you? And maybe that does mean going with them to clinic or helping them search for that thing online.
Yeah, especially, you know, with people that, you know, would struggle to get over that barrier. I think it's really important that, you know, you have someone that, and, you know, you can, there are forums of people that, you know, have gone through it that can also help you. So even if you don't have anyone in your local area, your town,
community groups, stuff like that, you could take someone like that with you, so that would be comfortable for you.
I think just building your support network is really important, but also having doctors like Dunks is so important.
Yes,
like,
that you know you're going to a GP who would respond like that is definitely comforting.
And with care and comfort, and like, you know, it's, it takes pleasure in your pleasure, isn't like pleasure
to
in
see
your
glow up.
Exactly. Oh my God, I'm describing it as a glow up now. Yeah. I love it. Like, thank you. Like, because, I don't want this to be, I want this to be a story of triumph, you know what I mean, and actually seeking and myth busting. So I think we have done that.
I think we did do that.
Yeah, I think we've done a thing. But this is not going to be the last time we have this conversation, so please stay tuned for more later on.
Well, that's it for this week, so keep up to date with us, listen again, and find out all about Shout Out online.
Ooh, yes, go to shoutoutradio.lgbt, and don't forget, contact us if you'd like to get involved with the show.
Next week, it's Halloween.
From myself and the rest of the team, once Steph's come out of the closet again, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.